Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and thanks for tuning in to Inside Scoop Live. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today I've brought to the program a very dynamic lady, Karen Sherman. She is the author of Mindfulness and the Art of Choice, which is out now on Loving Healing Press. Dr. Karen Sherman has been in private practice for over 20 years. Her first book, Marriage Magic, Find It, Keep It, and Make It Last, was originally published in 2004 with co-author Dale Klein. She is also a contributing author to 101 Ways to Self-Improvement, Volume 2. She's a featured writer on Yahoo Personal. She has a weekly blog on thirdage.com and writes the disputes column for hitchedmag.com. She is interviewed regularly in the media and is a frequent guest on both national and international talk radio stations. Dr. Sherman conducts a variety of workshops on relationships and lifestyle issues. She serves on the faculty of CW Post University, and she is active in many counseling associations. Karen resides on Long Island, New York, is married, and she has two daughters, and I just found out a grandson, granddaughter, grandchild.
Grandson,
okay. Well, welcome, Karen, to the program.
Hi, Juanita. Hi. Nice to be here with you.
Oh, it's so nice to have you on. You know, you and I first dialogued with your book, Marriage Magic, a few years ago, actually, and I'm just so happy to actually have you on the program talking to you live. Yes. So congrats on Mindfulness and the Art of Choice. It's a really fantastic book.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about this title because it's so intriguing. What do you mean by mindfulness and the art of choice?
Well, let's start with the art of choice. I truly believe that everybody deserves to have a life that is filled with joy, with happiness. But unfortunately, I think that most people, unbeknownst to them, live almost on autopilot because we've learned certain patterns from our childhood, and we learned those patterns because it helped us to survive in our family of origin. And that was really a smart thing to do when we were kids. But because they worked, we just continued to do them, and we do them habitually. And so now, as I said, it's almost like we run our lives on autopilot, and we don't really have choices. And so I think that if we can rewire our brain, which is what the book is about to a great extent, then we can make choices for ourselves. And in order to do that, we have to be much more mindful about ourselves and about the kinds of patterns and behaviors that we're involved in order to make those changes.
Great. So why did you decide to write this book and put it out there on shelves at this time?
I have a private practice, and in the practice there are two main areas that I focus on. One is relationships and marriage, which is what provoked the first book, but the other is that I help people to reach their fullest potential. And quite frankly, I had gone through my own personal journey where I got to a point where things in my life were really not very good. I myself had come from a family of a great deal of dysfunction, a lot of personal abuse, and I struggled with having to really look at my past. I realized that I was professionally very happy and successful, but I was not feeling that way personally. So I really had to go through the process of being self-reflective and found that there were these tools that helped me to be able to get past my past, so to speak, not to identify myself only with my past. And so I was able to free myself, and then I started using these same techniques with my clients, and they were getting very powerful reactions also. And so, you know, I can only see a limited number of people in my practice. I wanted to be able to put it down and hopefully be able to reach a greater number of people.
Well, you certainly do a great job with this book, and I hope it does get into the hands that need it the most, obviously. You know, you talk about the fact that you had a very dysfunctional and childhood, there was abuse there. Now, do you see these kinds of maybe negative emotional patterns that you talk about in this book? Do you see that in a childhood that maybe didn't have that severe abuse?
Yes, you know, absolutely.
Okay.
And I think sometimes what happens is that it's almost more difficult for people who have not had the severity mm-hmm. that I did, because when you have the severity I did, it's very blatant. It's in your face, and you know, okay, you know, my life really was very troubled. But when you come from a home where it's almost very subtle, where you, by and large, have a loving family, but there are very subtle messages that make you feel not so secure, not so positive about yourself, really undermine your self-esteem. Those negative messages are going to stay with you throughout your life and not allow you to really, look for your fullest potential. So I really feel that this book is applicable to a lot of people, not just people who have had the kind of dysfunction that I talk about in the book. The reason that I expose myself as much as I do in the book is because it's a way of saying, even when you've had the kind of past I've had, you can recover from that. So it's really done to let people know that you do have hope, mm-hmm. that even if you've come from something that's been horrible, that doesn't mean that you have to continue to think that there's no hope for you in the future.
Was that a really powerful part of your own healing journey as well, to put all of that down on paper and put that out there?
I think that it was, but quite frankly, I think that I had done a lot of my healing before I could put that out there on paper, because though I do think that writing about what experiences you're having is very important, which is, by the way, Juanita, one of the major exercises that's in the book.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that I really used the book as a way of helping me heal. I needed to have objectivity when I was writing the book, and so a lot of the healing was already done by the time that I was able to put it down on paper.
Yeah. I mean, you've been in and around this whole arena for a very long time.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
So how is it that one's behavior, basically a behavior as a child that is kind of a survival type of mechanism, ends up becoming a habit that in adult life is that autopilot kind of a syndrome? How does that actually happen, and can you give us an example?
Oh, sure I can. What happens is, again, you do whatever you have to as a child because you don't have many resources as a child. So you do whatever you have to adapt to your circumstances. And I truly believe in my heart of hearts that parents do the very best they can. But for lots of reasons, they don't necessarily act in the most loving ways. Now, sometimes it's just a matter of, you know, missing a signal along the way. I'll give you a real quick example from my own life. Because my mother was never home when I was a child, and this is at a time in history where mothers did not work, I had decided that I was going to always be there for my older daughter and do for her as much as I could because I wanted to give her something that I didn't have. Somewhere around the time she was 10, she said to me, "Gee, Mom, you really don't think that I'm capable of much." And I said, "No," which I really didn't believe. I mean, I thought she was unbelievably capable. And I said, "Why would you think that?" She said, "Because you're always doing things for me." So the message she was getting was clearly not the one that I meant to be giving her. Okay, so that to me is an example of how a parent could have wonderful intentions and still the child takes a different message. But let's go back to your original question. So let's say a father has to travel a lot for business. And it's, again, he's not meaning to hurt the child in any way. But if the child ends up feeling like daddy's never home, and then when daddy finally does come home, he's so exhausted and beat that when the child comes to greet him, he's not totally available to that child, the child is going to internalize it as, "Daddy doesn't love me that much," or, "I don't really feel like I'm that worthwhile." Because as children, we always feel egocentric. We always feel like it's because of us.
Yes.
Okay, so now that is the way the child wires it into the brain. That's the way the brain reacts to the situation. I had a situation, I go to greet daddy, I'm not really well received, you know, I'm not loved. Now, the next time that something happens, the child again may go towards daddy, and maybe daddy has a stomachache. And so, again, daddy goes to kiss him, but he doesn't want to kiss him a lot because he's afraid he's going to make the child sick. Well, the child doesn't know that. Mm-hmm. All the child knows is, oh, look at this. Again, daddy is standoffish from me. That's the way the child takes it in. Now he's got two situations that, in the child's mind, feels the same. Now there is another brain connection where it's the same message to the child. This now becomes a filtering system, the way that the child is perceiving the world. And so it actually becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy because the child now will hesitate in other experiences. Maybe the child isn't going to go to daddy so quickly. And so now maybe daddy is going to try to be more responsive to the child's actions and not go at the child because he sees that the child is standoffish. And this just keeps going and going and going. That's right. Okay. Now, I know that's a very long-winded answer, but that is what happens.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And we have proof that these early childhood experiences absolutely correlate to what happens later in life.
Yeah, because that wiring is basically set.
That's correct. Mm.
Is it usually the directly related to the parents, the family of origin, that sets up these kinds of autopilot responses?
Well, they're probably going to be the ones that are going to have the greatest impact, but it's not always the parents. It could be siblings.
Mm-hmm.
It could be caregivers who are basically the ones that are taking care of the children because the parents aren't around. It could be grandparents. It could be teachers. But a lot of it really is going to be the parents
mm-hmm.
because they're the ones who are the closest to the children and giving them their sense of worth.
Sure. Are there any core issues that seem to come up consistently with your clients?
I think probably the two biggest ones are the sense of I'm not worthy and a sense of abandonment.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And you can basically, with all different kinds of emotional issues that people have with anger or this or that or the next thing, it all comes down to one of those.
Well, you said which are the main ones.
Yeah.
It can come down to other things, but those are the main ones.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting.
Now, anger is generally the cover up for hurt. And so you look at where's the hurt, and the hurt comes down to you don't want me.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not worthy or yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Interesting. So it seems to me that someone who really doesn't see their life as a set of choices like that you talk about really tends to see themselves as a victim. And we hear so much about this these days, about victimhood, victim consciousness. And I'd like you to talk a little more towards that issue and how this whole situation sets up a victimhood for later in life.
Well, I think what happens is that people end up feeling helpless. They end up feeling like they're just basically unhappy with life, even if they don't call themselves victim, that they're just basically unhappy with life. They feel like, you know, this is the deck of cards they were dealt and, you know, they're just going to play it out. And they don't realize that a lot of times they're afraid to try something different, or they don't even consider what other possible choices they exist, because again, they're so locked into what they've always done that it doesn't even occur to them that there are other possible choices, because emotions cloud you.
Mm-hmm.
You can't think clearly when you're having an emotional reaction. So if you can heal these wounds and bring the emotional level to a much lower level, you can't change what's happened. The facts are the facts. But if you can take the emotional energy away from them, then you can look at all the different possibilities. You know, sometimes when I'm working with people and they, you know, talk to me about a situation that's really upsetting them, and I listen so they can get it out, and then I say, well, isn't it also possible that the person did this because of, and they've never even thought of that.
Yeah.
So, again, going to your question about victimhood, I think it's really important for everybody to know that they have responsibility. You can't change somebody else. You can't change a situation, but you can change your reaction.
Yeah, yeah. That's such a powerful, powerful statement. And I love the approach that you're talking about, that you have to be conscious and aware of that emotional response that is coming up.
Yes.
And really to correlate that with maybe a childhood issue, and then, you know, go forward in your life with a different choice.
Right.
I think that's just really, really fascinating. Do you think that everyone has some type of habitual response that's going on in their life that they're probably unaware of?
Well, I don't want to say everyone. I think to a greater or lesser degree, but I can give the listeners a hint about how they can know if they're having a reaction that's tied into the past.
That was my next question.
Okay. Which is, when you see that you are having an automatic reaction to something that's very intense and you can't let it go, then that's usually because there is something in the here and now that triggered it, but it's because it's also hooking into something from the past. Mm-hmm. Because let's say that you and I are supposed to meet for lunch and you come a half hour later than I thought, but then you explain to me about why you were a half hour late. If it's just a misunderstanding, I'll accept your apology and we'll go on with our afternoon. But if for some reason that hooks into something from my past, I won't be able to let it go. Mm. So that's how you know that there's something more behind it.
Okay. So it's the letting go. And so if you're carrying a resentment, chances are pretty good that there's an issue there that needs to be dealt with.
Yes. Mm. Yes.
Interesting.
Okay.
Yeah. So do these core issues, just getting back to that for a moment, the I'm not worthy or the abandonment issue, do those ever go away completely for somebody?
Well, you know, years ago I used to say that the core issues are the core issues and they don't go away totally. I now feel with these tools that you can get the energy low enough that you can really work with them to a point where they're really not interfering with your life. I will say that I don't believe that the traditional talk therapy is enough. Mm-hmm. What talk therapy does is it helps you to understand the problem. But understanding a problem is very different than really releasing the physical energy that gets attached to these issues. Mm-hmm. And so there has to be a different kind of work. And when you do that other kind of work where you really get a chance to allow those old feelings to come up and release them, then they actually go away. They do heal.
Isn't that interesting? There's so much that is coming out now that talks about emotions being held in the body and the physical structure. And
absolutely.
And it's fascinating. What are you seeing with your clients as typical physical responses like that?
Well, your body is absolutely the way that you can tell if something is going on. And one chapter in the book is devoted to your body being your barometer.
Mm.
Because even if you're not aware, because a lot of people are not aware, if you start to learn to check in with your body, that will be a great way to know that there's something going on. Because when something upsets you, your body will be tense. If you're not totally relaxed, something's going on.
It's a really interesting model to be able to take that traditional talk therapy but branch out. And I know that you also talk about visualizations. Let's go into that whole aspect for a while, because I know that this is also key to helping rewire the brain.
Absolutely. There is research which indicates that if you visualize, you will get the same effect as if you're actually doing something. Now, people actually know this because we've heard stories about when athletes are coached to see themselves crossing the finish line, they do better. So people really know that we use visualizations in this way. So even if, let's say, you're angry at somebody, if you visualize yourself expressing that anger to somebody, you don't have to go punch them out because you will get that satisfaction in your imagination. Okay? Now, you can't go back to, let's say, when you're 5 years old anymore, because if you're 25 years old, it's long since passed. But you can visualize when you were a 5 year old. You can see yourself as a 5 year old and visualize seeing yourself in a certain situation and replaying it with a different ending so that your brain is making a different connection.
Oh, yes.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Or you can visualize your 5-year-old expressing herself to yourself as an adult, to an adult who is unconditionally loving, because what happened when you were five? You couldn't really talk about your feelings. You weren't allowed to. So again, but you see, when I say express, I don't mean, notice I use the word express. I don't say talk about them. Because again, the talking isn't necessarily it. You've got to let the feelings come out. Many of us don't want to actually re-experience those feelings because it's like, oh God, I don't want to feel them again. They're terrible.
Yeah.
But all they are physical sensations. Mm-hmm. And once you allow yourself to re-experience them, they go away.
Yeah. And there's a lightness I know that really feeling those feelings that have been really stuck in the body, there is a tremendous amount of lightness and freedom that
yes.
happens when that finally comes up. And
yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really, really is powerful. Well, are you suggesting doing writing, like writing to that younger version of yourself? Or
what I suggest is that when somebody has a feeling inside of them, that what they do is free association writing, which is you just write as fast as you can.
Mm-hmm.
You don't worry about spelling. You don't worry about grammar. You just keep writing, because what you're trying to do is bypass your thinking. And even if you can't, nothing is coming out, you just write, I don't know what to write, I don't know what to write, I don't know what to write, still so that the thought process doesn't get in. Now, what this does is it serves two purposes. Number one, when you do the writing, you're purging.
Mm.
So you're letting out the feelings, and once you let them out, then they're not in you. The second thing is that when you do that kind of writing, you might be very surprised to see what actually comes out that you haven't allowed yourself to really acknowledge previously.
Mm.
So it's a wonderful, wonderful technique.
Gosh, that's great.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Established in 1998, Rebecca's Reads is a book review and publicity service serving a large reading audience as well as a wide community of authors, publishers, publicists, and buyers and sellers. They offer reviews of recently published books as well as chapter readings, teasers, and videos to help you decide what book you would like to read next. Their insightful author interviews take connecting reader and author one step further, and if you decide you would like to purchase a book, an easy-to-navigate link will allow you to purchase the book immediately online. For the authors, publicists, and publishers, Rebecca's Reads has a variety of publicity services to help them market their book to their reading audience. Their services are budget-friendly and effective. For buyers and sellers, they have a monthly list of current reviews in the Book Review Index for easy browsing, as they know your time is precious and efficiency is a priority. Be sure to visit RebeccasReads.com and browse around their new space. Whatever your literary need, this user-friendly website may be just what you're looking for. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Just to remind you, I'm speaking today with Karen Sherman, author of Mindfulness and the Art of Choice, which is out now on Loving Healing Press. You can find out more about Karen through her website, choicerelationships.com. Is this also included in with the idea of visualization?
Yes.
Is that affirmations and like vision boards and those sorts of things?
From what I know about vision boards, that has more to do with attracting things that you would like in your life.
Okay.
And personally, I don't disagree with that, but that's not the same as the healing work that I'm talking about.
Okay.
But again, my knowledge of vision boards might be limited.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've known of people doing vision boards of the person that they are hoping to be or want to be, so they'll put pictures of happy people and, you know, smiling faces or whatever, you know, that sort of thing. So I was just wondering if that came under the umbrella of visualization for you. Well, let's talk then a little bit about the mindfulness aspect of your message and the tools that you give in this book that teach mindfulness.
Well, the mindfulness concept is where you have to really use some effort and really work this process. So, for instance, a few minutes ago, we were talking about your body. Now, especially for Westerners, we seem to be cut off at the head, you know, sort of, I should say really at the neck, and we concentrate more on our head in the way we think about things, and we forget about our bodies. So one of the things that I would suggest is that people sort of tune into their bodies once or twice a day. Now, they can do that while they're on the phone, while they're driving. It doesn't matter, but just sort of take stock of what your body feels like, because if you know that your body is tight, then if you start to become more and more mindful of that state, then when you do become tight, you can say, oh, I'm tight. Let me see what my thoughts are now, because then you become more aware of your thoughts. You could learn to relax a little bit more. The other thing is, as I just said a moment ago, become mindful, become aware of your thoughts. But you see, it's more than just awareness, because awareness is just you're perceiving it. Now you've got to work your thoughts. I don't know who did this study, but there's something like that we think 70,000 thoughts a day.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that's really scary. I mean, I don't know what he was doing in his life that he studied that, but there are so many thoughts that we're not even aware of. Most of them are negative.
And those
thoughts are having a very damaging impact on how we feel and how we act. Now, with those thoughts can be changed. And so, again, if you're not mindful, being aware, working them, changing them, then they're just going to continue.
Mm-hmm. I love that differentiation between awareness and mindfulness, because I don't think I've ever quite heard it put that simply and that eloquently, and that really brings that whole issue of responsibility to it. If you ask me, it seems like.
Good. I'm glad. I'm glad I was able to be that succinct about it.
Yeah. No, it's wonderful. So why, tell us a little bit about your work on, in the whole realm of relationships, and why you're drawn to this subject of relationships.
Truth?
Mm-hmm.
You want the truth?
Of course.
Well, I've really been a relationships expert since I'm 8 years old.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that was part of the dysfunction. Not only did my parents have a very difficult relationship, but I was right in the middle of it. And I guess that, you know, going forward, I not only want to help couples, you know, have good relationships, but I also feel very strongly that the children in a marriage should be protected and feel safe and secure. So it's just always been my passion. It's just always been where I've been drawn to help people. This book, though it is pertinent to each individual, in a relationship, of course, sometimes people come to see me for couples work, and it's really because they haven't learned the skills to have a good relationship. But very often what's happening is that one or both of them are also being triggered from their past. So they're not really having a relationship with each other. They're reacting really from things that have gone on a long time ago. So this book can be used to help each of them. And what I'm hoping eventually to do is to put a sequel to this book and talk about how to use it within the realm of being a couple as well.
That's a great, great idea. Well, what are you seeing? Is it a communication breakdown that happens when there isn't that mindfulness in a relationship? What's some of the results that you're seeing?
Well, I'm not sure which way you want me to talk. Do you mean in a normal relationship or when this stuff from the past gets
Well,
in the way?
I guess, yeah, no, when this kind of, these emotional issues from the past kind of get in the way, what, as a kind of marriage counselor, what do you see as being some of the typical things?
Okay, what happens is, I'll give you a quick story. Let's go back to that abandonment issue and the father traveling. Years ago, I had a client whose husband was very aware that his wife had this issue. He had to go on a business trip, then found out that there was a second business trip right afterwards, and realized that his wife was going to be acting very, very upset over this because he was going to be gone so long. Spent an entire day at work trying to change the trips, but couldn't. Called me up, said to me, how can I bring this to her so that she'll understand that I didn't do this intentionally? So we did a whole session about that, went and discussed it with her, didn't matter. She went ballistic on him.
Oh, gosh.
You don't love me. Obviously, you don't care about me, you know, and so this is what happens in a relationship. If you're not aware that you are having issues from your past, when your spouse does something or your partner does something, it feels like it's really happening in the here and now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no reasoning with somebody, because when emotions come up, you can't be logical. You can't reason. And so the marriage gets very, very muddy at that point, and lots of blame. And unless the partner can really stay very grounded, they're getting attacked, and so then that gets very complicated.
Yeah.
And chances are they've got issues also. So you can see, you know, what a mess that becomes.
Yeah, very, very messy. Do you think that on some level most people are attracted to the people they are in relationship because of these unresolved childhood issues that they're trying to work out? Yeah?
Yes, absolutely. As a matter of fact, there's a very famous marriage therapist, Harville Hendricks, and he says, and I totally agree with it, that unbeknownst to us, we are drawn to people who have traits that are similar to the dynamics of our family of origin that have been unresolved, because we're going to try to work them through with our partner. But what he says, which is really very hopeful, is that if we work them through, it's a very powerful relationship.
Mm.
So if you've had, let's say, a father that's very controlling, you're going to be drawn to somebody who's also very controlling, and then attempt to assert yourself and not be controlled by that person.
So it's just a part of us evolving as humans that we need to get through those issues.
That's correct.
Hmm. Well, how does dealing with the original wound actually change someone's present relationship, you know, how they perceive it, and maybe really change it on a physical level, and then change their future relationships? This is always so interesting.
What happens is that, again, it becomes part of your history, but there's no more energy involved. So now what happens is that you can have your relationship, appreciate your partner for who they are, be more sensitive to who they are, enjoy your life together in a much healthier way, enjoy the relationship for what it's meant to be, which is to enhance one another, not to complete one another or, you know, make the other person whole, nor expect that your partner is going to make you whole. I think, unfortunately, a lot of our media portrays this fantasy for people of, you know, oh, you complete me, or I can't live without you. And I tell the people I work with in class or workshops or my clients, those are the fantasies of the various creative people.
Yeah.
But that's not reality.
Yes, yes, yes.
And then the rest of us say, oh, I want that.
Yes, it's just a TV show.
Yeah, that's right. I remember once my husband was looking at a TV commercial where there was this man surrounded by five magnificent models. He said, why didn't I ever have that? I said, because you weren't in the commercial.
Yeah. That's great. Well, do you suggest that most people that are married or considering marriage do some form of counseling or, you know, something that is going to bring this kind of awareness and mindfulness to their relationship?
Now, look who you're talking to. I always think that the more people can learn about themselves, the better off they are. I think that life is a constant journey. And so whether it be that you do it on your own or that you do it through books or you do it with the help of someone, I think it's always a wonderful experience to be more mindful of yourself. I'm in this business, and I've gone through therapy by myself with other people. I just read Eckhart Tolle's book, A New Earth, and I learned some wonderful things in there. So it's a constant process. I think as far as couples, I do think that a lot of couples need to learn skills. Unfortunately, another myth is that, you know, you say, I love you, and that's going to be what's going to make things work, and that nothing could be further from the truth.
Right.
So for couples especially, I think that they should take advantage of learning skills. I do think that throughout one's life, you constantly have to adjust and should look for that.
Mm.
Look to grow and change and evolve.
Be flexible.
Sure.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, look at all your choices.
I love the idea of choice because it really does put you in the driver's seat and take you out of this autopilot, like you say. And really, it's interesting to see how many people are really starting to become aware of that and are opening themselves up to the possibility that their life really is a choice. And it is a choice to be unhappy or to be happy.
Yes.
It's not.
That is absolutely correct.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah, I hope so too. You know, you had mentioned earlier, and it just a thought has come to my mind, and I want to kind of throw it out there for you about children and how to for parents to become more aware of their parenting skills and
yes.
and how what they do really influences their children. So I know that children are just so very resilient. How do you think it affects the child if a parent has been maybe a little neglectful or whatever words you would like to use for them to, you know, have that awareness, then turn it around and start repairing that bond with their child?
Well, I think first of all, parents need to know right from the beginning they make an impact on their children. Even the way you hold a child when you're feeding him or her, you know, have you ever had one of those hugs where people hold their arms close to their body?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. What is that? That's not a real hug.
Yeah.
You know, well, children can feel, you know, the way your arms hold them as well when you're feeding them and the way you gaze at them.
Yeah.
You know, don't just shove a bottle in their mouth and, you know, watch TV. They're looking for you.
Mm-hmm.
The prefrontal cortex, which is right behind your eyes, which is why women always tell guys, would you please look at me? That has a lot to do with attachment. So,
oh, really?
Yes.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. So anyway, you know, I think it starts right from the beginning. That's number one. Number two, nobody, as I said before, nobody is going to do a perfect job. And I think that it's really important, as I said before, children think everything that happens that's bad is their fault, that you're not going to be perfect. Tell your child you're sorry. Acknowledge that when things didn't go right, that it was your fault. Because children will be able to understand if you say, you know, I yelled at you before, but it really wasn't your fault. Mommy's just having a bad day. Then it will make sense to the child, and it really will make a difference to them.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, that would be the biggest thing that I would advise parents to do early in life. Of course, what you got to try to do is work on your own issues so that you're not getting triggered too often. You can be as present as possible for your child.
Good point. Very good point. Tell us, Karen, a little bit about the workshops that you're doing today.
The workshops that I do vary. It depends on I do workshops on relationships and skills.
Mm-hmm.
I do relationships on stress management. And it just varies. I will say in the beginning we said that I have a grandson now.
Yes.
And my priorities have shifted a little bit. That little guy has really become very important to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not doing quite as many as I had been before, but those are the two main areas that I'm still doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I do some teleseminars on, like, teaching couples how to fight properly.
Right.
Because if they know how to handle their conflicts, not only can their relationships be better, but they actually can have a lot more intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you know, I send out newsletters and I write articles a lot. I'm hoping to get a lot of my information out that way.
Wonderful. What seems to be for you with your workshops and seminars and in your newsletters right now, what is kind of the hot topic that you're dealing with? Or is there one?
Again, I'm trying to constantly let people know. My main focus is the fact that you have choices, that you have responsibility, and to let people know that that's really where their power is. You know, a lot of people get resentful because they are so annoyed, like, why didn't he do that? Or if she had only said so and so. But you don't really want to put it on somebody else. It's your power is within yourself. Even in relationships, I'm about to actually go on YouTube with a video. And the message in the video is that you are the one who can make the difference in your relationship. Don't wait for your partner to do it, because action equals reaction. And if you take a certain action, then your partner will react differently to you.
Yeah.
And again, you've got the power.
Yes.
And I'm not looking to make people control freaks.
No, different power.
Yeah. So that's pretty much my message.
Mm-hmm. That's great. I'm wondering how addictions play a part in what we've been talking about today.
Well, I think any addiction, whether it's a hard addiction like gambling or drugging or drinking, or a soft addiction, which is like workaholism,
mm-hmm.
it's always, I see it as an escape from not wanting to deal with whatever it is that's bothering you.
Mm-hmm.
And when I deal with addictions, which I don't deal with all that often, but when I do deal with them, I don't really look to work with the addiction per se. I look at those behaviors as the symptoms, and we try to work with what's underneath. What is it that is bothering you that you're not willing to look at?
Yes, absolutely. I was wondering if you dealt with a lot of addiction issues with your clients. So.
Not that much. I don't, you know, when I get to somebody who is an active, let's say, alcoholic
mm-hmm.
or an active drug addict, I think there are a lot of, those are not my specialties. I think every professional has to know where their strengths are and where their limitations are. So I will refer those out. But every now and then when somebody is really like just about done with the actual active behavior or it becomes a piece of the relationship, I will work with it. And as I said, I don't then look at the actual behavior. I will look at it more as what is the pain that you're avoiding.
Mm, interesting. You know, we're living in such a fascinating time right now with so many people really looking at these issues of becoming more aware and evolving in as who they are. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on why we're seeing such an influx of this kind of information. You know, you talked about Eckhart Tolle and his new book. Well, this is just, you know, there's a huge groundswell that's happening because of this new book. And I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts to why there is this expansion happening right now.
You know, I don't know.
Mm.
I can't really answer that to
mm-hmm.
you, but in his book, he also makes reference to the fact that there are lots and lots of people who are starting to wake up. Well, this is my theory. Of course, I have no idea if this is right or not. You have a lot of baby boomers. And the baby boomers have always been a very awakened generation who have always been very active and willing to be vocal about things. So perhaps it's because they are willing to, again, step forward and say, we can't just live and turn our heads away from, you know, the things that are going on now, and we've got to be much more aware of what's going on in our lives. I don't know, but I'm personally thrilled that this awakening
exciting.
Is taking place.
Oh, it's exciting. Yes, absolutely. Well, Karen, let's mention your websites. I know you have two websites going.
Yes, I do.
Let's
mm-hmm.
mention them.
It's, okay, thank you. It's www.choicerelationships.com, choicerelationships.com, and the other one is my name, www.drkarensherman.com. And at either website, there's a lot of giveaways. I've got a 3-week program for relationships, which is based on the action equals reaction principle. I've got 5 great tips to a top relationship. I forgot the name of it already, but something like that. I've got a free newsletter, which comes out monthly, how to shop for a therapist. And there's products on there that are available to help with, you know, lifestyle issues that and relationships. And I'm hoping to put up a lot more products, you know, as time goes by.
Great. Yeah, you have a couple of really wonderful websites there, and Mindfulness and the Art of Choice can be purchased through your website, or do you have links to Amazon, or how does that
work?
Yes,
both.
Okay,
if you do it through my website, I offer a guarantee. So it can be done either through my website or through Amazon.
Okay, great, and probably ordered through local booksellers as well.
Yes,
okay,
absolutely.
Well, you're everywhere.
I'm sorry?
You're everywhere. Your book is everywhere.
Oh, I don't know everywhere, but if I'm around enough, that would be terrific.
Yes.
Only because I want people to be able to learn from the tips, because I think that there are some tips that can be useful for them. At least I hope so.
Oh, absolutely, Karen. Well, it's been so great having you on the program today. Do you have any final thoughts you want to share with listeners?
Well, again, I just want them to know that they each have the power to make changes in their life, and even if it takes some work, it is worth it, and that they can truly have a joyful, satisfying life that is full of love, and not to be afraid to do it, because it really just opens up so much happiness.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Karen, and Beth, to you, thank you for coming on the program. And you
and Juanita, thanks for having me. I really am so grateful to you for enjoying, you know, for letting me have this opportunity with you.
No problem. Well, you go have fun with your grandson, and
thank you.
I know we'll be talking again.
Okay, Juanita.
You
have a great weekend.
Oh, you too. All right, listeners, there we go. I've been talking with Karen Sherman, author of Mindfulness and the Art of Choice, out now on Loving Healing Press. Her websites, once again, are choicerelationships.com and drkarensherman.com, and that's Dr. abbreviated drkarensherman.com. So I certainly hope you check it out. Check out this wonderful book. It should be on all of our bookshelves for sure. So thank you so much for listening to Inside Scoop Live today. I'm Juanita Watson. And until next time.